Russia is not an authoritarian country. It's not a communist country. It's a country that believes in traditional family values, something that is with at the heart of the MAGA group. Russia is a natural ally of the United States. And instead, we've got these warmongers like Keane and Hodges and Petraeus that think it's in the best interest of the United States to see how far we can enrich the Lockheed Martins, the General Dynamics, the Raytheons.
As a matter of fact, there's a meeting in Washington, D.C. today where Andrew Yermak and head of the Ukrainian press corps are meeting with Raytheon and Lockheed Martin this day. And they're continuing on this theme here where you're seeing on the smiles. Yeah, they're loving it, man. Let's get together with Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. We're getting in a situation where it is unclear if the Ukraine is going to even survive through the winter, either on the front line or at the home front with all this energy that's getting shot down like you're talking about.
Right.
And these guys are spending their time trying to have big contracts to make American contractors more rich.
This has nothing to do with any kind of strategy other than making these U.S.-based corporations rich and their shareholders rich. We are supporting a regime that embraces Nazi ideology, that shuts down all opposition press, that just removed a mayor of Odessa to replace it with a military governor the other day. without following any kind of legal procedures. And yet, that's who we're supporting. We're supporting people who actually embrace and celebrate Nazis. And we think that's fine. And then when the Russians react to that because they lost 27 million people to attacks by the Nazis in World War II, that they, you know, they tend to take this stuff kind of seriously. It just shows that the average American is so completely out of touch with reality. And to make it worse, our government leaders are even further out of touch.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to put. I have some more sympathy for many in America because they are deluged, unlike with channels like this or some of our colleagues in the industry, who are also doing a great job telling the truth and having people on like you who also talk about what's happening on the truth. But when they see stuff like The Atlantic and when they see stuff on Fox, like with Jack Keane or any of these other guys or the president himself, they see a world that's like, no, we are the dominant power here and everybody else is quaking in their boots. And as a matter of fact, at this same meeting here, in my view, you had, and you're going to see it here in a second, both NATO leaders and the useful idiots in the media that are going to amplify this. Not only do we want to go after Russia, but we want to go after Russia and China simultaneously. Here's Mark Rutte, Secretary General, talking about expanding this alliance into a global military one.
Well, let's be absolutely clear on this. Australia and New Zealand and Japan and South Korea, the Republic of Korea, we've worked very closely together with them. In NATO parlor, the IP4, the Indo-Pacific 4. And you know why? Because we acknowledge that the Euro-Atlantic and the Indo-Pacific cannot be seen as two separate theaters. They are combined with North Korea and China supporting Russia's war effort, Iran supporting Russia's war effort. Let's not be naive about it. And we know that, as I said before, if China would do anything against Taiwan, most likely that Putin will be forced by Xi Jinping to move against NATO. So we have to stand ready, we have to work together, we have to train together, we have to procure together.
So let's not be naive here. I mean, everybody knows that if Xi Jinping decided to go to war against Taiwan, that he would force Vladimir Putin, whether he wanted to or not, to attack and go into NATO. What say you, Larry Johnson?
Yeah, these are Western fantasies of declining economies. You know, I was watching, it's related. I was watching the Gaza peace plan signing the other day. And here you had all these subservient Europeans sitting behind Trump with not a single one of those European economies is economically growing at a rate above 2%. All are growing barely at 1%, some less than that. Every single one of those European economies has a massive debt structure. Meanwhile, there were six BRICS countries, either members or partners or people who are affiliates, who were also at that meeting. Their economies are growing at a minimum in excess of 4% and above. So just from a matter of economic strength, the West is weak. Militarily, though, the West is also, you know, those NATO countries are also weak. They don't have, England can barely field the total force is like 70,000 guys. And of those, only maybe 20,000 are combat effective, could potentially be deployed forward. So you've got this fantasy world of Europe believing that they were something that they once were 80 years ago. They're no longer that. Meanwhile, Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Iran, Indonesia, the BRICS countries are growing. And despite, you know, Donald Trump today said, oh, the people are leaving BRICS. That's a lie. He is absolutely gaslighting people. It's not true. It's just the truth is opposite. India last week, the week before last, they're buying the Russian oil. They're paying for it with Chinese currency. Okay? They're not paying for it with U.S. dollars. They basically said, okay, we're ignoring the U.S. dollar. We're going to pay for it with Chinese currency. And this absurd theater that Trump is putting on. I got this great Gaza peace deal. It's like going to a wedding. The preacher's up there saying, this was the greatest wedding of all time. And you're in the audience going, why weren't the bride and groom up there? Okay? we didn't see Hamas and Israel together. Yeah. They didn't show up at the peace deal.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You know, celebrating a wedding. Yay, we had a great wedding. We didn't have a bride and groom, but by it, it was a blast.
Cake was good.
That's called delusional thinking. And the fact that there's so much of the media and so many of the politicians celebrating this nonsense. And it's like, guys, there'd be reason for hope. At least we saw with Bill Clinton when had Yitzhak Rabin sitting there with Anwar Sadat shaking hands. Okay, we had a bride and groom. At least it was real. And what happened out of that? Bibi Netanyahu helped kill Rabin. Okay? Kill Rabin to stop the peace process. And the Muslim Brotherhood killed Anwar Sadat to stop the peace process. Now we're faced with these Europeans sitting there nodding like a bunch of bobblehead dolls at Donald Trump's, this is a great agreement. I'm going to sign it here. Hey, we got peace. 3,000 years of peace. And you're going, where's the bride and groom, dude? Where's the bride and groom?
Yeah, doesn't live a lot of optimism even for that situation here. But then this is exacerbated because you have, again, General Keane given some of these same theories here about adding China into the mix.
Geopolitically, with a win like we saw in the Middle East for President Trump, does that affect Russia? Does that affect China and how they look at things?
Oh, absolutely. Just as weakness affects them, the fact that they become so aggressive during the previous administration is because they believe the American leadership was weak and they could take advantage of it. And the facts spoke to that as well. The attack that President Trump ordered on the nuclear sites, the decisive blow, got their attention.
And in Iran.
Yeah, in Iran. And what is happening right here now with the somewhat defeat of Iran and the proxies and moving forward to peace and stability in the region, all engineered by who? American leadership on a world stage setting the whole standard for what's to be accomplished. This is what they're trying to depose. They want to have that influence. And here we have a president doing it. You bet you they're paying attention.
Yeah, they are paying attention, all right. I had to watch that one a couple of times. You are actually making the case that China and Russia, nuclear superpowers, economic superpowers, especially in the Chinese side, and that they are afraid of the United States because what happened to Hamas. It's hard for me to think that that's actually what he said. What do you make of it?
Yeah, no, look, they create this narrative, and then there's the reality. Reality number one, Hamas has not agreed to disarm. Hamas is not going to disarm. Israel has not agreed to accept a two-state solution and to accept Palestinian authority over Gaza. Ergo, there's no agreement for phase two. There's just the opposite. There's disagreement. The United States has attempted to bully China. And China finally turned around and said, okay, we're not going to take it anymore. They said, forget about the rare earths. You're not getting any more of those. And we, the United States, while it's not a significant portion of our economy in terms of dollar value, it's heavily significant in the military industrial complex for being able to produce certain weapon systems. And without that, we can't do it. And we do not have an alternative. It's not like we can go out and buy it from somebody else. There's nobody else to buy from. We tried to pressure China in the past because China was, up to a point, heavily dependent upon helium purchases from us. Chinese turned around and said, hey, we can't be that dependent. They separated themselves. Now they're only like 5% dependent on the United States. The United States started to impose fees on Chinese ships that dock the U.S. harbors. Chinese said, fine, we're doing the same thing to you. The reality is the United States cannot compete economically with China. We're not big enough. We're not strong enough. We're not deep enough. And people say, oh, you hate Americans. Say, I'm just telling you the reality of the way it is. You want to go on with your dream world? Go on with your dream world. China is somebody that we ought to be friends with, not enemies. But part of that friendship has got to be based upon mutual respect. We said, oh, we're going to prevent you from buying chips. They said, okay, we'll develop our own. And they're getting the workarounds right now. You listen to some of the U.S. car manufacturers, the head of Ford, they went over to China and saw what the Chinese were doing in terms of using robots to build automobiles. And he came back and said, we can't compete. We, the United States, cannot compete anymore with China. They're so far ahead of us, were his words. And yet here we are looking to try to resolve things militarily when the only thing it's going to do is get some more of our middle class kids killed, where none of the children of the elite. You don't even see Jared Kushner out there on the front line. No, no. He's on the front line of making some money for the family.
Yeah.
You don't see Eric Trump out there on the front line. You know, hey, they're too busy doing important things to make money. They want the kids from the working class families to go out there and sacrifice themselves. And then when they wind up paraplegic or quadriplegic or missing arms or with traumatic brain injury, they'll say, oh, that's too bad. Hopefully one of these private charities will take care of you, because we, the government, are not, which is the reality.
You know, I want to circle back around to Hegseth, where we started all this, because whether we think that it's nonsensical or not, this is the Secretary of, well, now war, they call it, defense. It's certainly not defense, I guess. And he clearly has the ear of President Trump. So when you look at what may come next and what we may do, these things seem to kind of mutually reinforce each other in quite a negative way. And I'd like you to, as we watch this last clip here, just kind of give us the best estimate you can of how this is going to be received in Russia and what they may do as a result of this, because Hegseth here is talking about an incredible signal he's going to send to Moscow.
As a result, NATO allies have committed more than $2 billion in security assistance to Ukraine through the NATO Pearl Initiative since August. Now, allies often say that Ukraine security is synonymous with European security. Well, now then, therefore, is the time for all NATO countries to turn words into action in the form of Pearl investments. All countries around this table, no free riders. And I certainly appreciate Secretary Ruta's leadership in this important effort and all the nations today that we've heard step up. Many more commitments just today to that Pearl Initiative, which sends an incredible signal to the world about the commitment.
What kind of signals do you think is going to be received or interpreted on the Russian side?
The Russians are just going to laugh because it's just words. It's talk. It's not action. And even if let's say that goes to action, that they're going to actually invest the money to start creating, to build these weapon systems. They're not building modern weapon systems that match what Russia has. The West doesn't have a single weapon platform that can match the Iskander or the Kinzhal or
the Oreshnik, yes.
The Oreshnik as well. Yeah, you know, so we're not even in the same league. We're struggling to right now. What was the Ruta said? Russia builds in 3 months the number of artillery shells that we take to build in a year. So talk is great. Let's see what they actually do. And when it comes to doing, it's not just having a will. It's actually, you've got the infrastructure, the technology. Part of the problem we're seeing right now with Germany in particular, their energy deficit. And it's not much better either in France or in England. So the three countries that used to be sort of the anchor of NATO in terms of the big economies and the industrial capability, they've been hollowed out. And you don't turn that around in a year or 2 years. And the United States is frankly not much better. You know, look, we can provide 20 to 50 Tomahawks. Ukraine, you're shooting upwards of 1,000 Patriots missiles in one night, and we can only build 550 Patriot missiles a year. How does that work?
What does that tell you?
Yeah. THAAD missiles? Oh, we built 50 of those. $13 million a pop, though. They're really a good value for the people invested in Raytheon. Yeah, I mean, it's so ridiculous. And that people like Hegseth sit there and say this with a straight face.
Yeah, I think that most of the intended audience there is, I don't think it's even Russia per se. I think it's more in the United States to keep the support going, because the Raytheons and all those folks are just relishing this that's going on right now at the AUSA conference here in Washington right now. It's a very veritable smorgasbord for all the weapons arms. I had somebody who was actually attending that send me a note earlier today, just that it made them sick because they're presenting all of these ammunition, all this weapon systems, whatever, like you're going to the mall. And you're looking at some of the higher end stuff. He said even like some of the displays look like the jewelry store. And he actually sent me a photograph of that. And he said that's just how glorified all this stuff is. And of course, you're talking billions and billions of dollars, and that's why they do these things. And that's great for them, Larry. But it's not good. The country itself doesn't really benefit from any of this stuff. We're not any safer. In fact, you can argue we're less safe because we make other people think we may use it against them, so it raises their level of defense even higher. And then all it does is keep the war going over here. So what's the value of this? I mean, is it literally just, talk about among the elite, is it just that, hey, works for us, so yeah, we'll just keep doing it however many Ukraine people died to keep that war going? We don't care.
Self-licking ice cream cone. You know, we build it. You know, if we build it, they will come. Well, we build it, and then, you know, we're the ones coming to it and spending the money on it. You know, you look at our use, the entire concept of how we use military force without having any strategy attached to it. And we're seeing that right now in the waters off the coast of Venezuela, where we're attacking and blowing up unarmed boats that are not firing on us. They're not trying to kill Americans, at least directly. They've got the allegation that they're carrying drugs, but the boats are incapable of reaching the United States without having four or five major refuelings if they're ever able to make it. And yet we find it so much easier. Let's just kill them.